Jana Shlakaya, Taksur and Meditam, Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So today, we are commemorating the disappearance days of these two great personalities, Raghunandanath Thakur and Vamsi Das Babaji. So let's speak a little bit about them. So, first let's speak about Raghunandanath Thakur. And Raghunandanath Thakur is the son of Mukunda. Mukunda, of course, is one of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's eternal associates, as is Raghunandana. Raghunandana is known in Krishna Lila as Kandarpa Manjari. Kandarpa means Cupid, Cupid Manjari. And there's an several interesting stories about him and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he and the deity worship that his father was doing. So Mukunda, of course, was a physician. He was renowned for his great symptoms of ecstasy. I mean, one of the stories in Mukunda is that he was advising the Muslim Nawab about medical affairs, and somebody came up and started to fan the Muslim with a peacock fan. And when he saw that peacock feather on the peacock fan, or the peacock feathers, he fainted in ecstasy and fell off the dais, that means the platform. And the king rushed down, and the king said to him, what's the problem? And basically, being a humble Vaishnava, he didn't say, well, I was in ecstasy. He said, I was actually experiencing epilepsy. And the king understood that it was actually a symptom of great ecstasy. So, in any case, Mukunda sometimes had to go on medical business to visit patients and such. And one time he went to visit some of his patients, and he said to his son, Raghunandana, my dear Raghunandana, please take care of the deities and make sure the deities are offered something to eat, and make sure they eat. And so Raghunandana didn't know all the rules and regulations for deity worship. He hadn't read the Archanapada at that particular point. Didn't know any of the mantras. But still, he tried his best to offer some boga to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the only mantra he knew was, eat, eat. That was his mantra. Instead of all these fancy mantras, he didn't know any mudras, none of this stuff. So anyway, so he just said, eat, eat, and of course the deity usually doesn't get down from his altar and start eating. Usually the deity eats angani asha shakalan driya dri timanti. He eats with his eyes and with his ears, and usually he leaves everything over for the devotees. But in this particular case, because of Raghunandana's great devotion and insistence and dedication and determination, the deity got down and started eating from the plate. In fact, he ate everything on the plate, which is quite remarkable. So anyway, so Raghunandana's father, Mukunda, got back a few hours later and said, where's the Maha Prasadam? And Raghunandana said to his father, there's no Maha Prasadam because Krishna ate everything on his plate. And Mukunda said, what do you mean? And Raghunandana said, the deity was actually a little stubborn in the beginning, but as soon as I insisted and cried and whatever, threatened or whatever, then he began to eat. And the father said, yeah, there's not the proper procedure for deity worship. What are you talking about? And Raghunandana said, well, if you want to see what actually happened, just watch in the window, and we're going to offer him another laddu. And so they offered the deity laddu, and Raghunandana was going, eat, eat, eat. And eventually the deity got down and ate half the laddu because he was full. His stomach was full, so he couldn't eat any more than that. And so when the father saw that, he began to offer his obeisances to his son. Later on, in an interesting exchange with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Mukunda, when Mukunda and Raghunanda had arrived in Jagannath Puri to see him during the Chaturmasya period, he said, who was the father and who was the son? Is Raghunandana the father and you the son? Or are you the father and is Raghunandana the son? And Mukunda replied that actually Raghunandana is the father and I am his son. So he was observing the etiquette of who was more spiritually advanced rather than who was older materially. So I had an interesting discussion with someone the other day, not about Raghunandana, but they were saying, well, I'm going to follow Chandravali because she's older. I said, well, that's not the point. Srimati Radharani is actually able to control Krishna. Srimati Radharani left, Krishna left the Rasa dance just to be with Srimati Radharani, not with Chandravali. And Chandravali is an expansion of Radharani. So it's not, sometimes, anyway, rather than get into all this Rasika stuff. So sometimes one considers more, or usually you should consider more the spiritual position rather than the material position, if you're aware of these things. Although external etiquette, as we were mentioning the other day, should be followed. We were talking about, you know, etiquette and austerities, the body, etc., like that. So generally we do observe the etiquette. We don't go around telling our father, even if our father's not a devotee, that I'm actually your father, you're my son. It wouldn't work like that, isn't it? If I went to my mother and said, you're not my mother, I'm your mother. Oh, not your mother, but I'm your father. So you got to listen to me. It just wouldn't work. So anyway, so that's Raghunandana Thakur, whose disappearance day it is today. And now we'll speak about Vamsi Das Babaji, who was quite an interesting personality. And the reason we actually know that he's a great associate of the Supreme Personality of God, a great devotee, is because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur considered him such. Even though most people didn't understand him, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would sometimes take his remnants, not just to eat his remnants, but he would take his remnants back to the Gaudiya Math and he would distribute it to his disciples. I mean, that's quite remarkable. So it takes, as I said, it takes one to know one. In other words, it takes a great devotee to know a great devotee. Because basically our method of ascertaining someone's spiritual level of advancement is quite limited. We can see basically up to the level of nishtha, you know, steadiness. We can say, well, someone's steady. And as far as other things, you know, we can guess when someone's exhibiting bhava or ruchi or something like that, but you really don't know what's happening internally. In fact, there was one time a person who came and exhibited so-called symptoms of bhava in front of Prabhupada and the devotees, and the devotees said, wow, what should we do with him? And Prabhupada said, kick him out, throw him out. So sometimes these things can be imitated. Like we see, even non-devotees sometimes, or people who are averse to the personality of Godhead can chant in a way that appears like so devotional that even members of the Krishna consciousness movement buy their CDs. I said, I'm not going to mention names, obviously, you all know who I'm talking about. But, you know, their devotion is simply an emotional, external manifestation and has nothing to do with the deep spirituality. Because deep spirituality can basically only be seen by someone who's deeply spiritual. And someone who is not, let's say, deeply spiritual, realized, we may consider material qualities to be spiritual or consider spiritual qualities to be material, as you're going to see with Vamsi Das. Vamsi Das Babaji. It's just we consider matter sometimes to be spirit and spirit to be matter. And therefore we need the association of devotees to determine, you know, what's actually real. So Vamsi Das Babaji, getting on with the discussion, was a bhajan anandi. Now there's two types of devotees, you know, real devotees. There's bhajan anandis and goshan anandis. Goshenanandis are those who preach Krishna consciousness. And Bhajananandis are those who basically sit and do bhajan all day long or chant the holy names all day long and talk about Krishna's pastimes all day long. Of course, these two categories are not really mutually exclusive. It's not that if someone's a bhajananandi that he never tells anyone about Krishna. And it's not that if someone's a goshenanandi, he doesn't sit down and do bhajan. But, you know, these are the primary activities of each one. Like a bhajananandi, primarily he's engaged in bhajan. I mean, for example, there was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciple, Krishna Das Babaji, who many of us knew. And he would sometimes preach to the devotees, but generally when he was asked a question by the devotees, he would just start chanting Hare Krishna and laughing at them. Especially if they asked a management question. You know, what should we do about this? And he'd go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And so, anyway. But Prabhupada's mood was Goshenanandi. That is, by the process of preaching and helping other people, as Krishna says in the Gita, that no one will ever be more dear to him than he who teaches the science of Bhagavad Gita to others. There's no one more dear, nor will there ever be one more dear to Krishna than one who preaches Krishna consciousness. So that's Goshenanandi. Although we don't decry Bhajananandis, I mean, there's many great Vaishnavas, and the Bhajananandis do their bhajan in order to preach too, but in order to set an example, like we have Haridas Thakur, who also preached. I mean, obviously went door to door with Lord Nityananda, but his primary activity was chanting. When you're chanting 192 rounds a day, 3 lakhs a day, that's your primary activity. So, but it was an example, and that example shows us what how one can be absorbed in the holy names and inspires us. When you hear about Haridas Thakur and his determination, detachment, and his absorption in the holy names, it inspires ourselves. So it's actually preaching. So the Bhajananandi is actually preaching by his example. So another point about Vamsidas Babaji is he reached the highest stage of devotion and he didn't set an example of Vaidhi Bhakti. In fact, it's described he didn't chant on beads or any regulated type of chanting. It was just like all day long just being absorbed in Krishna's service. And Vamsidas Babaji had, as I mentioned before, a very intimate relationship with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When he saw Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would sometimes remark, a Manjari has come, so won't Radha also come? She will come, she will come. And Vamsidas Babaji was not born in a Brahminical family, and not even in a Kshatriya family, and probably not a Vaishnava family. He was born as in a family of a poor fisherman. That means they caught fish. And he was in a very hard and austere life, and his family business was obviously catching and selling fish. But when he went to catch or sell a fish, he would stop sometimes at this temple to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, the Gaura Thai temple. And he would meet this devotee, Narottama Das Babaji. Not the same Narottama Das Thakur, but anyway, sometimes devotees have that name. Even in our movement, sometimes devotees are called Narottam or Brahma or Narda, like that. So he met this Babaji and he learned about the bhajans of Narottama Das Thakur and developed a great attraction for Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. And when his parents saw that, they thought, you know, this is not going to work. They thought, we have to get him attached to this material world. So they arranged a marriage for him. And so they forced him to get married. We see this in India sometimes. The parents get very much nervous when the child gets attracted to Krishna consciousness. And then they do things. They send him away, send her to him away. Or they arrange a marriage, thinking the person's going to get attached. But actually, one who's attached to the holy name of Lord Krishna will never be attached to anything external. So, because he was forced to do that, and this is not an example that anyone else should follow, that he soon left home even though he had a six-month-old son. I'm not saying this is something we should do or encourage other people to do. Obviously, I encourage people to remain, you know, to get married, to get, you know, sometimes people then have this sense of artificial renunciation. Sometimes people contact me and say, you know, I'd like to be a brahmachari my whole life. And then one of the women they're cultivating contacts me. They do, this man told me he loves me. So you have this contrast there. Or like Prabhupada, one time was asked by a disciple to give him sannyas. And Prabhupada said to the disciple, you should get married instead. And then the next day the disciple came with his fiancé to meet Srila Prabhupada. So anyway, so then he took sannyas, or took the Babaji order, which was the prominent type of sannyas that Gaudi Vaishnavas had at that particular time. And he just gave up everything, and he was also, you know, he was austere before he took sannyas or took up the Babaji order of life. And he dressed in a simple loincloth. I mean, he's very, very short dhoti. And he would abstain from water and food for long periods of time, and didn't take care of his health, but always took a cold bath in the morning. It's described he was over 6 feet tall, and he was constantly traveling, and he was such a strong personality, even at the age of 80, the disciples had a hard time keeping up with him. He was on the Avaduta platform. Avaduta means like the wind. You know, the wind goes everywhere. You really can't predict it. You can't tie it down. It has no rules and regulations like that. One thing that's interesting about the wind, that if you go under a tree, the wind actually, you get more air under the tree. Anyway. So, his hair and beard were completely like not only not cut, but not combed or anything like that. He looked like a wild man. And his behavior was quite intimidating for people. You know, so people got scared sometimes. And he sometimes would speak in his local, what's called Mien Singh dialect of Bengali. And he spoke about Krishna's pastimes. And he would just shout out sometimes, Bhakta Vatsal Hari Pranabalaba Hari. And he would draw out the last Hari into a very long word, like Hari. But he was very strict as far as his presentation of the Siddhanta. He never did anything against the Siddhanta or presented anything against the Siddhanta. Gave up the association of non-devotees. And also the pseudo-Vaishnavas, which were the primary manifestation of external Vaishnavism there. And he traveled with deities. And actually, when you hear about these deities, not just little tiny deities. He had three sets of deities. A Balgopal, that means Krishna in the form of a child, usually with a Ladu, usually called Ladu Gopal. A 6 inches metal deities of Radha Govinda. 6 inches. And that's pretty heavy, like 6-inch deities. And then, 3-foot wooden deities of Gaur-Nitai. That means that. This big. That, yeah. 3 feet. Yeah, 3 feet. That's a yard. 3 feet deities of Gaur-Nitai. And, he would travel with them everywhere, and he would treat them like he was their parents. I mean, that was his particular mood about Salya. That he would chastise them and sometimes plead with them. And people came to ask him questions. He'd be talking to the deities and replying to the deities and referring to himself as in the third person. Even there's an interesting pastime that occurred in Jagannath Puri with him, that one time the cart wouldn't move. And, of course, this is very much reminiscent of several other pastimes, like with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the cart wouldn't move. All the kings, horses, men, soldiers, and the elephants couldn't move the cart. And then finally, Lord Chaitanya, with his head, was able to move the cart. And similarly, when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very small, it was the time for his grain ceremony. The cart stopped in front of his house, and he wouldn't move until they brought him out, and the garland from Lord Jagannath fell on Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati's wedding backboard. And they actually had the grain ceremony right in front of the deities, and then the cart would move after that. So in the same way, the cart would not move one time during the Rath Yatra. And Vamsi Das Babaji, what happened is he came, and he didn't push the cart. He had a conversation with Lord Jagannath. He said, you know, you should move your cart. You know, this is getting a little... it's too long, it's been here. And then the cart moved right after that. It's interesting. This is, I mean, these pastimes... These intimate pastimes that these pure devotees have, I mean, can't be imitated, but they're very much relishable. Like we're talking about Raghunanda and Thakur. Another time, he wanted to bathe his deities, and he was in Jagannath Puri, and he was some distance from the ocean. And he said to the ocean, come here, come here. And then all of a sudden, the big waves manifested themselves and came to where he was with his deities, and he was able to bathe his deities in the ocean in Jagannath Puri. Another time, he told a boatman to leave him off where there was a snake. And the boatman said, what do you mean there's a snake? So he came to where there was and actually there was a yellow snake. And he said that this is Anantadev. Anantadev has come. And then the snake went away. Another time, on a full moon night, he was camped out in the open. And then all of a sudden, 50 young women, attractive women, dressed in white, came and offered obeisances to him and left without saying anything. And so everyone understood that these ladies were actually demigoddesses. Because in India, I mean, women just don't go out. I mean, nowadays, of course, they do. But in those days, the women didn't go out alone at night. Especially 50 young, attractive women in white wouldn't go out. So... another time, so many interesting stories about Vamsi Das Babaji. Another time he was cooking sweet rice for his deity, Balagopal. But then, right before offering, he just threw it away. And he got angry with the deity, and he says, look, you've already eaten rice and gur. That's sweet rice with the gur, you know, the natural sugar that they have there from the palm trees. Because in the old days, even in those days, they were using sugar from palm trees much more than the cane sugar. Cane sugar is actually something really recent. It was introduced to India about 1,000 years ago, but didn't become prominent until maybe 100 to 200 years ago, when the British really started to plant it everywhere to exploit not only the people in India, but people in Fiji, people in different places around different islands, Trinidad and other places, so that they can make money from the sugarcane industry. So in those days, they used sugar extract from the palm trees. So anyway, so he got angry with the deities and said, you've already taken this, you know, how can you ask for more? So then they inquired by letter, and so he was in Bengal when this happened, to the Radha Govinda Temple. Radha Govinda Temple, of course, is in Vrindavan. And a reply came indicating that the offering on that day was sweet rice cooked with palm tree gore. So he, you know, so in other words, there's a non-difference of the deity. You have Radha Govinda and his deity that he was worshiping, you know, Balagopal. They're the same person. There's like Radha Golokananda, Radha Shyam Sundar, and all these deities, they're the same. So if you worship one deity, you're actually worshiping all the deities. You should understand that. Just like if you want to worship Radha Damodar, then you worship Radha Golokananda. There's that, of course, there's that story with Madhavendra Puri when he was bringing the sandalwood back for Gopal. And he arrived in Ramuna, where Shirachura Gopinath was. And then he got instructions just to offer this sandalwood to Shirachura Gopinath. And in this way, you'll actually be offering it to Gopal. So we should see like that. That it's always the same Krishna. It's not that Radha Shyam Sundar is any more Krishna than Radha Golokananda. You know, of course, we very much like Radha Shyam Sundar, obviously. I wish I liked Radha Shyam Sundar, but anyway. But there's no difference. Krishna is Krishna. At least Krishna in his original form. I mean, obviously you have different expansions of Krishna, which is also Krishna, but different moods. Like you have, you may have Rishi Ranga. They're worshipping Lord Ranganath, which is in a mood of awe and reverence. It's the same Krishna, but it's a different mood. But the mood of Radha Golokananda is the same mood as Radha Shyam Sundar. We should see that. Anyway, so, and he executed many miracles. There was a man suffering from cholera who went outside of his hut, and Vamsidas came out and placed a tulsi leaf on the tongue. The man was instantly cured. He went back home. Mm. Then when he became very old, he couldn't do madhukari anymore. Madhukari means like a bee going out to different people's homes and collecting just like one japati from each home. This is actually the standard for a particular status of sannyas. There's kutichak bahudak, there's madhukari, Paramahamsa, and Paramahamsa. So in the madhukari stage, one goes to each person's home and only gets at most a japati. It doesn't sit down for 10 japatis and 3 bowls of dal. So anyway, he couldn't go out in madhukari anymore, so he said to his servant that Lord Chaitanya told him, you are too old to go begging, I will feed you. This is very interesting. Then he got very angry. He said, this Gauranga wants to feed me. And then Vamsidas took a stick and waved it threateningly at his deity. He said, you do not have to go outside for serving me. If you go outside, I will break your legs. Oh, my God. I mean, that's really paternal. You know, not that he would do something like that, but it does like the parents. When I was young, my mother would say, if you do something, I'm going to make it so you can't sit for a whole week. So, of course, she actually tried it. But that's a different thing. So, sometimes people would come, and they would come to him for instruction, and he would get angry, and people would chastise them for coming to him for material benefits. And one time he was asked, you know, how can you be saved? And he replied, whoever offends a Vaishnava cannot be saved. He said, Jivadoya Namaruchi Vaishnava Sevan Iharachara Dharma Nahi Sunasanatan. Kindness to all living beings, taste for the holy name, and service of the Vaishnavas. Apart from this, there is no other religion. Once a man asked Vamsidas how to attain Krishna, and Vamsidas replied, the personality of Kali is extremely powerful. When Kali came, Krishna told Narada, now it is the time for me to go. Narada asked, what will be the future of all the creatures in this world? Krishna replied, those who worship the brahmanas and feed them will attain me. Narada asked, what of those who are too poor to serve the brahmanas? Krishna replied, those who worship me with flowers and tulsi will attain me. Narada then asked, what of those who are lame from birth? Krishna replied, if someone only once at the end of the day calls my name with undivided devotion, he will attain me. Actually, that's very encouraging. Just have to wait till the end of the day and just chant. And then, so he left this world on March 17th. What, even though today's his disappearance day, anyway. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He went to his village, near his village, on March 17, 1944, and he left this world on July 23, 1944, and went back to the spiritual realm. So that's Vamsidas Babaji. So do we have time for Bhagavatam? Yeah, we can go quickly. Quickly to Bhagavatam. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, maybe we don't have time to do responsive reading today. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 5th chapter, text 29. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'm just going to go on, read the word synonyms, and then hopefully we can comment. Iti tanapi rajendra praja sargodhya munihi upecha narada praha vachakutani purvavat. So, iti, thus, tan, them, the sons of Prajapati Dacha, known as the Savalashvas, api, also, Rajendra, O King Parikshit, Prajasagadiyaha, who are under the impression that begetting children was the most important duty. Munihi, the great sage. Upecha, approaching. Naradaha, Narada. Praha, said. Vachaha, words. Kutani, enigmatic. Purvavat, as he had done previously. The translation, O King Parikshit, Narada Muni approached these sons of Prajapati Daksha, who were engaged in tapasya to beget children, and spoke enigmatic words to them, just as he had spoken to their elder brothers. So we'll just go on. Next text is, Dakshayana Samshunuta Gadato Nigamam Mama Anvichatanu Padavim Avratrinam Bratrivatsalaha. O sons of Daksha, please hear my words of instruction attentively. You are all very affectionate to your elder brothers, the Hariyashvars. Therefore, you should follow their path. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Narada Muni encouraged Prajapati Daksha's second group of sons by awakening their natural affinity for their brothers. He urged them to follow their elder brothers as if they were at all affectionate toward them. Family affection is very strong, and therefore Narada Muni followed this tactic of reminding them of their family relationship with the Hariyashvas. Generally, the word Nigama refers to the Vedas, but here Nigama refers to the instructions contained in the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Nigama kalpa taror galitam palam. The Vedic instructions are like a tree of which the Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit. Narada Muni is engaged in distributing this fruit, and therefore he instructed Vyasadeva to write this Mahapurana Srimad Bhagavatam for the benefit of the ignorant human society. Anartho pashamam sakshad bhakti yogam adokshaje lokasya janato vidvangsh chakre sad vata sanghitam. The material miseries of the living entity which are superfluous to him can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service, but the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 7th Chapter, Text 6. People are suffering because of ignorance and are following a wrong path for happiness. This is called anartha. These material activities will never make them happy, and therefore Narada instructed Vyasadeva to record the instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva actually followed Narada and did this. Srimad Bhagavatam is the supreme instruction of the Vedas. Galitam palam, the ripened fruit of the Vedas, is Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Om Magana Timadanda Shaganjana Shilakaya Chakshudan Meditam Yenatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, of course, Narada Muni is being a very expert preacher here, according to time, place, and circumstance, and he's using people's family attachment to encourage them to become Krishna conscious. And, that, of course, devotees do that with their parents quite a bit. And in many countries, we see, not so much in America, where there's not so much family attachment, which is interesting, but I've seen in South America, it's a very common thing that, and also in India and also in Fiji, where family attachment is stronger. Americans somehow are the family attachment. It isn't, somehow the cultures is like completely gone. I mean, people live with each other without getting married. There's no commitments, of course, in one sense, that helped Prabhupada propagate the Krishna consciousness movement in the 1960s and 70s, because people were easily able to disobey their parents. So in one, it's a two-sided coin. So, but in other countries where family attachment is very strong, we find when one member joins the Krishna consciousness movement, then generally the family, the parents, they tend to follow that. So you have many, many generations. I mean, even in Serbia, we have one family where like three generations are disciples, are devotees. And it's actually quite a nice thing to see the family together becoming Krishna conscious. Serbia, Croatia, not so much in Slovenia, because actually as you get further to the west, you get less family attachment there. So Narada Muni is being very expert, understanding these are people from India, Vedic people, and saying, your brothers do this, don't you want to join your brothers? So, of course, we cannot use that particular technique in America that much, but we have other techniques that Prabhupada actually said, one time he said, if you join the Krishna conscious movement, if we're looking for a wife, we'll find you a wife. And Krishna, of course, says in the Gita, Chaturvidha Bhajanti Mam, he says four types of people approach me. People looking for wealth, people who are inquisitive, people who are looking for knowledge, or people who are in distress. So Prabhupada and expert preachers use these four different things. And generally, what people are looking for in modern society is not so much for wealth. They're in distress, that's a fact. But the reason most people are in distress in modern society is because they're looking for friendship. Modern society people are very much disconnected. I just saw one advertisement. I was looking at the news on the internet, and one man was playing with his pad, either an iPad or a Samsung or something like that, and he was looking at that, and his wife was trying to talk to him, and his kids were trying to talk to him. His wife said, The gardener says, I give really good massages, You can imagine a wife saying that to the husband. And the son is saying, something like, I flunked out in school, and the man is just going like this in his little iPad or whatever it is. And it's an advertisement, so people will buy this particular device. And so people are very much disconnected nowadays. Even though they have all the social networking stuff, Facebook, Twitter, and everything like that, but face-to-face conversation. People text each other in the same house, when they're in different rooms in the same house. So if we address that need in preaching Krishna consciousness, that will be very, very, in other words, we have to be friends. That's the best, the devotees should be seen as the friends, the well-wishing friends, and then people will naturally become attracted to Krishna consciousness. We just simply heavy people out with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, it will not be that effective. Friendship is actually the way to make people devote. Social networking. Actually, there's sociologists who study the religions who have stated this, that people join religious societies now because of social networking. That's one reason why the Muslims are so successful and the Mormons are so successful, because of that social networking concept. Okay. On a happy note.